Thank you. And thank you to Josh, who went and got this clicker at great personal expense, I'm told. So I've only got 20 minutes, and actually it looks closer to 17 minutes now. So I'm going to go as quickly as possible to leave some time for questions at the end. What I've done here is, that's not the right button. There we go. Humor. It's nice and broad. 15 minutes. What can I tell you about humor in 15 minutes? This is an hour-long workshop that I've taught, so I condensed it down heavily. Two of my colleagues at West Wing Writers, Chandler Dean and Sarah Bruin, we built this together, so have to give them credit where it's due. Yes, I'm going to stubbornly spell it the American way, by the way. So very quickly about me, as Guy said, I just recently left my job at West Wing Writers. I'm joining the Biden administration while it's still there. I'm undergoing a security clearance at the moment, which is why I can't say anything on camera, but I'll tell you later. In my previous role, I've written all sorts of things for all sorts of people. Some of those things are funny. Many of those things were not funny, but they said, just like a little joke in there. And so what I'll do today is give you just some pointers on how to stick a joke into a speech that you're writing. And first, let's talk about why we should use humor to begin with. I know a lot of you or financial institutions or governments, who people who maybe don't want to tell a joke or don't think that they should. A lot of leaders are allergic to jokes. They won't let you use them ever. Is anyone in a position where they write for someone who doesn't ever want to be funny? Yeah, okay, yeah. I get it. They're thinking, why take the risk? Why not just play it safe? But the thing is, there's an even bigger risk that public communicators, they risk being forgotten. Many speeches are forgettable, and that means they risk their message going unheard. A joke can mitigate that risk. So I'll talk to you about why we should use humor, and then a couple of tips on best practices, how to use it. There are three main reasons to use humor in a speech: to deflect criticism, to critique your opponent, or to advocate for your cause. We'll start with deflect. This is one of the most common examples of humor in politics. To illustrate this, I will show you what is probably the most famous joke ever told by an American president. It's Ronald Reagan, of course.
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
That move, drink the water, yeah. As you may know, Reagan was, at this point, the oldest president in American history. He's no longer the oldest president in American history. That record's been beaten twice, but it was a big liability for him among voters, and so by telling this joke, he implicitly says, I know I'm old, I get it. He owns the issue, and that makes it much harder for his opponent to use it against him. And by twisting expectations and calling Mondale young and inexperienced, he's implicitly saying, I'm wise and I'm experienced, which he can't actually say that. He can't say, I'm very experienced, right? No one, they would come off as arrogant. But by telling the joke this way, he gets that message across without protesting too much. And I know a guy who's taking some notes on this.
And I've been around, I know it all, but I've been around a lot. I do remember that.
It worked for Reagan, so let's hope it works for him. Next, you can use humor to critique your opponent, or just an idea that you want to debunk. It's a more memorable way to make your point, and it can soften the blow a little bit. So this example is from Senator Elizabeth Warren during the 2020 presidential campaign. She was doing a town hall, and in the clip I'll show you, there's a gay man asks her a hypothetical question. What would you do if someone came up to you and said that they believe marriage is between one man and one woman? And here's her response.
Well, I'm going to assume it's a guy who said that. And I'm going to say, then just marry one woman.
Assuming
you can find one.
It's So this is a great example of a way that you can use humor to be really incisive and critique someone in a way that creates a feeling of warmth and positivity in the room. What she's essentially saying is that homophobes should mind their own business. But if she just said that, it wouldn't be very memorable, it wouldn't come off as friendly, it wouldn't have gotten that kind of reaction in the room, and she would have missed an opportunity to demonstrate that she's clever and friendly. Finally, you can use humor to advocate for an idea that you want to spread. So if you really want someone to remember an achievement you've had or a belief that you hold, humor is a good way to help people wrap their heads around that idea. And here's a joke from President Obama during his White House Correspondents' Dinner. Did you write this one, Sarah? Let's see. Let me just play it first. Yeah, okay, it's not a clip, sorry. So he says, today, thanks to Obamacare, you don't have to worry about losing your insurance if you lose your job. You're welcome, Senate Democrats. The punchline there is a joke about Senate Democrats and how they tend to lose elections and therefore their jobs. It's a somewhat self-deprecating joke about Obama's own party, but he uses the opportunity of the joke to praise his own healthcare policy. If he didn't have the joke there, it might come off as a bit braggy. It's supposed to be a humor speech. He deserves to brag about that policy. Thank you. But it's more agreeable this way. And it lifts up the achievement, it makes it memorable, and it just comes off more agreeably. So, I know I'm going very quickly, but I'm doing my best here to tell you how to be funny. there actually is a science here, and hopefully the tips I show you will be things that you can use. Humor isn't just an innate thing that you're born with. It's not something you have or you don't. It is a skill just like any other. There are some techniques. You have to practice them, but there are some techniques. I'll talk about two of them, principles and structure. So let's just start with some fundamental principles about what makes something funny. First, if it says what we're all thinking, but no one else has said. Ultimately, comedy is the pursuit of laughter. And we laugh at things that we're delighted by, that we're surprised by, and things we've never thought of before. If you can say something that checks all of those boxes, but also is something you might have been expecting, I'll show you an example, you can really make someone laugh. So this is an example from the House of Commons. It's Prime Minister's Questions on July 6th, 2022, which if you're a historian of recent British history, you may know, was the day before Boris Johnson resigned, the day after Rishi Sunak resigned, which sort of triggered all that, and a couple of weeks after rail strikes started happening around the country. So people were upset about the trains being canceled, people were mad at Boris Johnson, people were resigning en masse, and a Labour MP called Peter Dowd asked this question. Oh, no. Maybe it won't play.
Peter Dowd. Mr. Speaker, given that the Prime Minister doesn't like war counts and strikes, what legislation will stop further war counts and strikes amongst his cabinet colleagues at the
It was slightly interrupted, but...
I tried to make it louder.
I know, that's okay. Yeah, another principle, don't interrupt a joke. what he says was, given that the Prime Minister is opposed to walkouts and strikes, what is he doing? What legislation is he proposing to stop walkouts and strikes from his own government? Right, so these two things that were on people's minds, Peter Dowd brought them together, got a good reception. Next, make unexpected connections. That sort of was an example of that as well. It's a simple idea, but it can explain so much of what we find funny. If you take a topic or a word or a phrase and you place it in a new context that your audience hadn't considered. So this is the governor of Utah, Spencer Cox. He was speaking at the Gridiron Dinner in Washington last month, which is a sort of humorous gathering, private gathering of politicians. So he's a conservative Republican guy. He's not a Trump supporter, but he's a conservative guy. He's from a rural part of Utah. And here's the joke he made. He said, it really is such an honor to be at the famed Gridiron Dinner. You see, they don't usually let farm kids like me into rooms like this. Unless you count January 6th. So it's two things you would never have expected January 6th to come out of there, but you make the connection. He's being self-deprecating, which always helps. And by making that unexpected connection, the joke really lands. And then the final principle, it comes from the world of improv comedy, if anyone's ever endured that.
Yes.
If this is true, what else is true? When someone makes a joke, the best way to react to that joke is to accept the premise as true. We've all seen public figures on the debate stage or maybe on a late night couch trying desperately to deliver a canned line. When the moment doesn't call for it, the joke falls flat. But in off-the-cuff contexts, the best way to get a big laugh is to build on the premise that's been handed to you. You could do that by asking yourself this question. If this is true, what else is true? So I'm going to do something slightly self-aggrandizing and use a joke that I wrote recently. It's not that funny, but I think you'll see the setup. I was writing for a retreat at a law firm. And the partner at this law firm was speaking, saying, thank you for coming to our annual retreat. We've been so lucky to have some truly impressive guests come and speak to us. Last year, we were joined by President Bush. This year, we'll be joined by President Obama. And just wait until next year. If those things are true, and they are, what would you say, what else is true?
Trump.
Right, next year we'll be joined by President Trump. That's not funny, though. But you set up a pattern. These things are true, therefore this other thing is true, that the audience is sort of primed to accept that pattern, and then you can hit them with this. It's going to be the biggest, most unbelievable retreat I've ever seen. That line wouldn't work without the setup. But because those things are true, we intuit that this thing is true, and then that line lands. They didn't go for this line, which is why I can show it to you. But I was proud of it. Okay, those are the principles, and finally, we'll just talk a little bit about joke structure. Once you have your funny idea, you can use a couple of these tools, these building blocks, to build the joke. You can think of it sort of like joke grammar. The rules that govern the way a joke is written. Not every joke will include all of these devices, just like not every sentence includes every piece of punctuation, but in the moments where it makes sense for a joke, here are three tips. First, you have to set it up. Make sure all the info the audience needs to understand a joke is there before you get to your punchline. So here's another joke from the White House Correspondents' Dinner, this one by an actual comedian, Seth Meyers, in 2011. This set has a sort of bad reputation for, he made fun of Donald Trump in this set, and Donald Trump was in the audience, and some people think that this is the reason he decided to run for president. Despite that, it's still very funny. I'll just play the clip first. No. No, I won't.
This evening, I'm going to be making a lot of jokes about many of the people in this room, but don't worry. I assure you, no matter how harsh the jokes, they've all been vetted by the man at the top, Chinese President Hu Jintao.
So if you were writing that joke, you probably would not include the phrase Chinese President. It seems extraneous, it's a group of politicians and journalists, they probably know who Hu Jintao is. But there's a huge amount of people watching at home, you're all watching it now, for the joke to land and live on. You need that little bit of context. And it doesn't take how many syllables, is it? Just a few. But by priming the audience to hear the punchline of Hu Jintao's name, the joke lands so much more effectively. Everyone in the room now knows who he's talking about. If he hadn't said, use the title, there might have been, a couple of seconds where people were thinking, wait, who's that guy? Oh, right, he's the president of China. By that point, the joke's over, nobody's laughing. Next, stick your landing. End on your funniest or your most revealing words. Otherwise, you risk people laughing over the rest of your joke. So here's another example from President Obama.
John McCain is onto something. There was a point in my life when I started palling around with a pretty ugly crowd. I've got to be honest. These guys were serious deadbeats. They were lowlifes. They were unrepentant, no good punks. That's right. I've been a member of the United States Senate.
So McCain had accused Barack Obama of hanging out with some militant, reactionary people. Obama could have told this joke and said, as a member of the US Senate, John McCain is right, I do hang around with some no good punks. But it's not as funny that way. by landing on center, he's able to pull off a bait and switch, subvert the audience expectations about where he's going to go, and then pull the rug out from him. And finally, oh, there it is. Finally, escalate. Order your examples from grounded to absurd. So this is an example from Hillary Clinton at the Al Smith dinner in 2016, right before it all went down. She had fainted, I think, a month before this, and in the weeks following, Donald Trump started talking about health a lot. So she says, speaking of health, Donald has been very concerned about mine. I just want to put the information out there so everybody can draw their own conclusions. We've each released our medical records. My blood pressure is 100 over 70. His is unbelievably great. My cholesterol is 189. His is presidential. My heart rate is 72 beats per minute. His is the most beats ever, or the least beats ever, whichever sounds best. So it gets sillier over time. But we also land on the longest one. We sort of build up to that long punchline. If you're listing a few examples and you put the longest one in the middle, the rhythm doesn't quite work, you lose the audience. They have a harder time tracking where you're going. You'll also notice that this joke adheres to the rule of threes. Three is not a magic number. There's nothing inherently special about it, although you'll find it in all the ancient texts as well. Why does it work? At least for jokes, it works because the first one establishes a pattern, or rather, the first one establishes the subject. The second one establishes a pattern. The third one breaks the pattern in a way that our brains tend to find funny. So that's my super fast primer on humor. Deflect your criticism, critique your opponents, advocate for your ideas, because there is something uniquely powerful about laughter. When you laugh at a joke, you are implicitly admitting that something is true. You wouldn't laugh if it didn't resonate somehow. And in moments when our different subsets of audiences subscribe to different sets of facts, as we've been talking about in many of our sessions, having a shared understanding of the truth is very important. And with that, I think I have no time for questions, but...
You can take one.
I'll take one.
Provided it's a funny question, no pressure.
Sarah.
This is great, thank you for very helpful advice. I'm curious how you go about adding levity or writing jokes for a speaker who maybe isn't actually funny and is not so great with delivery.
Yes.
But wants to.
But wants to tell a joke? My first advice would be, if they want to be funny but don't want to tell a joke, you can borrow a joke. That there's Governor Pritzker, Governor of Illinois, gave a commencement speech recently, and I think he's a funny guy, but he didn't want to tell a joke, and so he quoted The Office, the sitcom The Office. He quoted Dwight Schrute and said, admitted that he's quoting Dwight Schrute, he gave credit, but it's sort of incongruous for a governor to be quoting The Office. It's funny. And he gets the laugh, and he's able to then take credit for the laugh. If you're writing a joke for someone who's not funny, I tend to... My approach is to write something that I don't actually find funny. The types of people that I've had to write these things for, you know, insurance CEOs or people like that, they have a different sense of humor. See, this is being filmed?
We can cut out of that.
Well, it's sort of the context, right? If it's a group of insurance CEOs, the things that would be funny in that group of people is different than in a group of writers and a group of comedians and so on.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you.